I bet you didn't know that the teaching of Latin in schools is making a comeback. Latin? Really? Isn't that a dead language? Well, take a look at what studies say about how well Latin students do on a test like the SAT. Memoria Press's Latin program will revolutionize your students' vocabulary, knowledge, and their understanding of grammar. And there is no better subject for teaching critical thinking skills. Visit MemoriaPress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR.
I'm sure that this is a perennial concern, regardless of your religious persuasion, attracting or perhaps even keeping the young people. We refer to these generations, millennials, Generation Z. They're somewhat arbitrary labels, but the problem is real, and it's actually even a problem addressed by the Mormons. A recent Religion News Service headline, 20 changes the new Mormon president has made to appeal to millennials and Generation Z. Joining us to talk about these changes, how they're made and what they are, Bill McKeever, founder of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Draper, Utah, and author of several books, including In Their Own Words, A Collection of Mormon Quotations, and Mormonism 101. Bill, welcome back.
Hey, it's good to be with you.
So, Bill, you interact with Mormons all the time in an apologetic sense. Do you deal with many millennial Generation Z Mormons, and are you dealing with young converts to Mormonism ever?
I do, but I find that many times the young people that convert to Mormonism usually have done it through the persuasion of a peer. And it could be like a girlfriend, it could be just a regular friend that they have at school, and of course they share what they believe with this person. And, well, here in Utah, of course, if you're an outsider, it's always good to be a part of the inside. So many times those that are not a part of the Mormon Church see a lot of their friends who are LDS and naturally want to be a part of them. So I can understand that. But what I see, though, is rarely do I find anybody joining, whether they're millennials, Generation Z, or even older adults, who are joining the church mainly for doctrinal reasons, or they've done a lot of study into the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, either theologically or historically. I don't see a whole lot of that, but it's usually through a lot of peers encouraging their friends to join, and they'll join for those kind of reasons.
So the general way this is being described in the press is that these changes are intended to appeal to millennials and Generation Z. Is it the case that the Mormon Church has the same problem that the Christian Church does, which is retaining kids of that age?
Oh, yeah. I think the LDS Church has a problem retaining not only a lot of young people, but members as a whole. They've come out in recent years admitting this. Retention is a problem, especially in foreign countries. It's even far worse in foreign countries. But yes, I think they are experiencing, for instance, the secularization of our country, and as it is affecting our churches, it's naturally affecting theirs. What makes it even worse for the LDS Church, though, is a lot of the reasons that people are leaving that I have found happens to be that the higher level of transparency that the LDS Church has been forced to show is tending to backfire on them. They have to do this. And I think we've talked about in the past, the Gospel Topics essays, for instance, that started coming out in 2013, where Mormon scholars were hired to write these essays that would better explain some of the questionable history of the LDS Church, especially in the earlier years when Joseph Smith was alive. And what's happening is they were being, yes, much more honest about their history, while at the same time, a lot of what they were being honest about happened to be information that many older Latter-day Saints were told were merely lies by enemies of the church, which, of course, would include people like me, I guess, because I don't agree with Mormon history and I don't agree with Mormon theology, and I'm critical of it. Not that I'm an enemy of the Mormon people, because I don't see myself as that, but certainly they were very confused by seeing what the church was admitting to when for much of their LDS lives, they were told that that was not a part of Mormon history. So you can see how confusing that could be and how it could actually backfire on them. And I'll tell you, Todd, I was just at the Mormon Miracle Pageant for these past couple of weeks, and I talked to numerous Mormons on the streets who would come up to me and tell me they no longer believe this any longer. They are there only because of their Mormon spouse or their children or whatever. But personally, they don't believe it anymore. And I found out by talking to a lot of the Christians that were out there on the streets ministering to the Mormons that were attending this outdoor play, a lot of us were hearing those same exact stories. They were having a lot of people come up to them saying they no longer believe it anymore. And in one case, I was talking with an individual who was probably in his 40s, and he specifically mentioned the Gospel Topics essays as being a reason that he left the church.
I'm just curious, you mentioned this event, and I can't let the conversation continue without you explaining what this miracle thing is that had so many Mormons there.
Yeah, let me explain. This has been going on for 53 years. It's an outdoor play held in Manti, Utah, and tens of thousands of Mormons can show up on a given week. They have enough chairs set out, at least this last time, this past 2 weeks, they had enough chairs set out to seat 14,000 people. And of course, a lot of other people bring blankets and they bring their own chairs and they just set up their chairs around the Temple Hill where the Manti Temple is located in the center of Utah. This play's been going on for 53 years. This is the last year they were going to have it. Russell M. Nelson, the president of the church, announced last October or so that they were no longer going to have these larger pageants and they were going to discontinue. And this was the last year for the Mormon Miracle Pageant in Manti. So as you can imagine, being the last, you know, set, and there's a short week of 3 days and then a longer week of 5 days, 8 days total, you're going to have a lot of people coming to this thing if they've never seen it before or they're just going to catch it for the last time. And so Christians have used this as an excellent opportunity to share the Christian faith with those who are attending this outdoor play. We get out on the streets about 6 o'clock or so in the afternoon, and the play doesn't start till 9:30, so we're just out there sharing and handing out literature, talking to people. I go out there with my replica gold plates and challenge Mormons to lift them and things like that. But it was amazing how many times I had people explain to me and to others that were out there that they no longer believe this. It was just really eye-opening, even for me.
Is there a certain irony in the fact that the changes that are being written about in the press that have been announced by Russell Nelson, the Living Prophet, are coming from a nonagenarian who is just one of many, at least octogenarian, leaders of the Mormon Church trying to attract the young folks?
It could very well be. I think Russell M. Nelson, the current leader of the church, he realizes that they do have a membership problem. They are hemorrhaging, is a word that I have read in other places. And they've got to do something to keep these people. And so a lot of the changes that are listed in Jana Reese's article, for instance, I think most of them are really just kind of like policy changes that any corporation would probably go through depending on what's going on outside of the corporation. So I don't see them as being all that dramatic. I mean, changing the services from 3 hours to 2 hours certainly might be met with approval by a lot of the membership, and it seems to have been met with a lot of approval. I guess there's a lot of Mormons that are happy that it's not 3 hours anymore. There's even a billboard here, Todd, in the Salt Lake City area, some advertisers saying something to the effect, better than a two-hour sacrament service or something like that, and basically making an appeal to the Mormons who obviously would know what that billboard meant. But I'm sure a lot of these changes are being met happily. But if you'll notice something, there's really not any doctrinal changes that are going on. Russell M. Nelson is a very traditional leader. I mean, let's be serious. He's in his 90s. Naturally, he probably is going to be a very traditional Mormon in his theology and such. But I think he is smart enough to know that the church is having problems keeping their membership. They want to keep the younger members, and so they're making some of these adjustments that they think are going to appeal to this younger generation. And I'm sure there's going to be an overflow of that, that a lot of these changes are probably going to please a lot of older Latter-day Saints as well.
I want to talk about that three-hour service. I don't think most non-Mormons are even vaguely aware that the service at the Mormon, quote-unquote, church down there on the edge of town is 3 hours on Sundays.
They have, like, you know, they sing songs kind of like what we would see in our churches as well. They have a gospel doctrine class and things like this. And what they did was they just trimmed it back down and made it a little more reasonable probably for most families, because you can imagine a three-hour service, that's pretty long. And in Mormonism, you have a lot of large families with young children, and trying to keep them corralled or at least interested for that long of a time could probably be very difficult, I would imagine. So I think the trimming of this back to a two-hour block is probably a smart move on their part, and I haven't found anybody that I've talked to that seems to be unhappy with that.
The other changes that are noted here, and this one I think probably may reflect a bigger problem that they have with their missionary system, and that is permission now for missionaries to call home weekly instead of what seems to me to be a draconian twice a year. First of all, what was the reasoning behind limiting the contact of these missionaries with their families at home?
That's a great question. I can only surmise, and that the answer to that would be, well, you're on your mission, you've pledged to serve 2 years, you need to focus on your mission and not anything else. Missionaries were allowed to, for instance, call home, talk to their mother on Mother's Day, and I think also at Christmas. And then because of, and I really think this is part of the reason, it was Thomas S. Monson, when he was president, and he was president before Russell M. Nelson became president. When Monson was in power, he's the one that announced that members could become missionaries at the age of 18 rather than 19, which was traditionally the age for young males. The age for female missionaries would go from 21 down to 19. When that was announced, I really thought for a minute, what is the reason for this? And it could have been because they're just having a hard time finding missionaries to fill those positions, and they wanted more missionaries out on the streets. And this is certainly one way of doing it, and when it happened, it did spike, there's no doubt. I think it went up to like 80,000 or something like that at one point. Now, it's kind of drifted back down and leveled out at around 60 or so. But I think it was a means to get more boots on the ground, if you want a military term for it. But I think they were having difficulty finding some qualified young people to be able to do that. Now, this caused a problem. 18-year-olds, while they may have been at the top of the food chain when they were in high school, now they're out of school, and really you could look at them as being kind of on the bottom of the food chain, and yet you're sending them out there to do this kind of a job. Many of them are very immature. Many of them have never been out of the home for any amount of time, probably have never even, well, they wouldn't have spent really any significant time even going to a junior college or even college. So these kids are pretty raw, and they're being sent out there having to live with other kids, and many of them were having problems with homesickness, and they were coming home early. And you have to understand that in a Mormon context, to come home early from your mission is not something that's looked upon very well in this kind of a culture. Those who come back early did not serve with honor, if you will, by serving out their entire time, are really looked down upon. Now, I know the church is trying to tell the people not to do that, but it's something that's kind of ingrained in this culture. You just go out there and you do it. And so they were having a lot of missionaries come home early, and I'm sure this idea of having them call once a week and contact with their families once a week is certainly going to help alleviate the homesickness that a lot of these young missionaries were facing. So I'm sure that's the reason.
Bill McKeever is our guest. He's founder of Mormonism Research Ministry, based in Draper, Utah. We're talking about changes made by the Mormon president to appeal to millennials and Generation Z. some temple changes after this.
Memoria Press now offers 8 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for children with special needs. These full-year packages help you teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art and music, poetry, science, history, Latin, classical and Christian studies in incremental and multisensory ways for mastery. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR9 to save on resources for your home or school.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority, they've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about changes made by the new Mormon president to appeal to millennials and Generation Z. Bill McKeever of Mormonism Research Ministry is our guest. Bill, there have been some changes announced with respect to the temple. First of all, kind of explain the context here, what the Mormon temple functions as, and then what is an endowment?
Yeah, an endowment is a ceremony that Mormons, known as patrons, that's the name given to them when they go through the Mormon temple endowment ceremony. It's called patrons. And this is where they watch a film, in many cases, or in some temples, such as the Manti Temple, and I believe even the Salt Lake City Temple, where they have live actors act out this type of melodrama of God the Father and Jesus the Son, who's known as Jehovah, and also Lucifer, who's a part of this big family here. And it's about the creation and the fall of man, and Mormons are supposed to make various covenants or promises to keep the commandments that they are given in the LDS Church. It's a very important aspect of the Mormon life. In fact, no Latter-day Saint can really hope to become exalted or to receive what they call exaltation in the celestial kingdom or godhood unless they participate in the Mormon temple endowment. So the temple is very, very important in the life of a Latter-day Saint. It's kind of a long ceremony. The recordings that I've heard of the ceremony, and you can even find video of it online. Someone went through with a secret camera and filmed the whole thing. So it's not really secret any longer, even though in the earlier ceremony, they were told that they would take a vow of secrecy and not talk about anything that goes on in the temple. If you asked a Mormon about that, they would probably say, well, it's sacred, not secret. But I find even some more honest Mormons, when it comes to that, would admit it's really both. And I would agree. It's both secret and it is sacred. So it's a subject that when I'm talking to a Mormon, I'm probably going to be reluctant to bring it up only because I know it's so sensitive and I'm not trying to say something that's going to bring my conversation to an abrupt halt. But certainly, they have made some changes. Jana Reese notes in her article that the endowment has undergone major changes to become more friendly to women. What she means by that is earlier this year, they got rid of some things in the temple endowment ceremony, particularly having to do with promises or covenants that the women would make to their husbands. For instance, the women would promise to listen to their husbands as their husbands listen directly from God. And the men are now no longer considered intermediaries between women and God in the temple. Now, how far that goes, I don't really know, because there is a portion in the endowment ceremony where the women get a new name. And that new name is important because that's the name that her husband is going to call her by on Resurrection Day. And so that becomes very important. So technically, the man still has a very important role, because if you look at it from that kind of perspective, the man is kind of responsible for the resurrection of his own wife. And also, there's a dialogue in this film. And in the film, the women, or Eve, I should say, in this case, she doesn't really say anything until recently. Now she's apparently saying quite a bit more. Well, more than nothing is always going to be quite a bit more. So they gave Eve a more prominent role in this melodrama that they are watching. And another thing is the women and the men make these promises together to serve God, whereas before it was more an emphasis on the woman following her husband, who in turn follows God. So in other words, there's the chain of command. That's been, you might say, a bit watered down now. So it's not so much patriarchy, if you will. So the women took that as a positive thing. Now, the question we could ask as outsiders is, well, wait a minute, I've always understood that this endowment ceremony was given by God to Joseph Smith. And you would think, if that's the way it was given to Joseph Smith originally, why all of a sudden does it need these changes? What we see in this is the church having to conform to the culture, instead of what I would think would be conforming to their scriptures or conforming to the words of their previous prophets.
You had mentioned this earlier, but it's listed among the changes in the RNS piece, and that is how they portray their history. You mentioned that they're kind of forced into the position of being more honest. What has forced the Mormon church to kind of fess up about its real history?
The internet. And the church has even admitted this. The internet has made it impossible for the church to conceal any of its dubious history. The information is out there now for everyone to see. So much of Mormon history books and things like that have been digitized, and they have been posted on the internet really for anybody to read if they know where to look. And this has definitely caused the church to have to be much more forthright in its history. And this is really one of the reasons why the Gospel Topics essays, which are available on their official website, LDS.org, those Gospel Topics essays had to be written, because you had members going to their ecclesiastical leaders, like their bishop or their stake president, saying, hey, I read this on the internet, or hey, I heard this from my neighbor. What about that? And I think the church realized the days are gone when they can merely say, well, that's just of the devil. Don't listen to your neighbor and don't look at the internet. Now they have to come up with some answers, and that's what's happened. So they've come out with this new history book. It's called Saints. I have a copy sitting right here. It's called Saints, The Standard of Truth. I have Volume 1. I understand Volume 2 has recently been released. I have not seen that one yet. But there's supposed to be 4 volumes. And the history, in many areas, I think, is a bit more honest than some of their past history books. But at the same time, there's some things in their past history books that I'm not finding in this modern history book. But still, my personal opinion, if I was an outsider and some Mormon friend of mine gave me this copy, Saints, the first volume, and I read it, I don't really think I would be all that enamored with the Mormon church, certainly not enough to join it.
Bill McKeever is founder of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Draper, Utah. He's author of several books, including In Their Own Words, a collection of Mormon quotations, and Mormonism 101. You can purchase these books and learn more about Mormonism Research Ministry at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Bill, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to talk about spiritual perfectionism with Colleen Carol Campbell. She's written, among other things, this: spiritual perfectionism, an obsession with flawlessness rooted in the belief that we can earn God's love, is the most dangerous form of perfectionism, because so many of us mistake it for virtue or deny that it afflicts us all. It's a toxic cycle of pride, sin, shame, and blame. We'll find out what she means tomorrow on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
If you appreciate Issues Etc., talk radio for the thinking Christian, and Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the world, please include a bequest in your will or trust for these worldwide media resources. Bequests aren't subject to federal tax or capital gains taxes. Ensure your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren the opportunity to listen by including a bequest in your will or trust for Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio.
St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Wildwood, Missouri is a proud sponsor of Issues Etc. And if you enjoy the relevant, Christ-centered teachings presented on this program, then you should come and join us at St. Paul's on Sundays at 9 a.m., where you will hear sermons that proclaim Jesus Christ and Him crucified for our sins, and enjoy in-depth Bible studies to help us grow as disciples. For more information, check us out at stpaullutheranwildwood.org.